On this episode of Newt's World,
the Democratic chair of the House Oversight Committee is calling on the FBI to investigate Parler's potential role in the deadly U.S. Capitol attack and its possible use as a channel for foreign influence.
Parler suing Amazon for kicking the app off its cloud server.
Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney calls Parler a potential facilitator of planning and incitement in the violence.
National leaders are questioning the site's potential role in the planning of the deadly Capitol Hill riot earlier this month.
Apple has banned the fast-growing Parler app.
Google has just removed Parler without any warning from its app store.
Cook decided the right thing for Apple was to suspend the conservative-leaning social media platform Parler from its app store.
We obviously don't control what's on the internet, but we've never viewed that our platform should be a simple replication of the internet. We have rules and regulations, and we just ask that people abide by those.
People threatening my life? I can't go home tonight. This is really a lot. We will be back up eventually because we're not going to give up, but it soon is difficult.
Hi, this is Newt. Due to the virus, I'm recording from home, so you may notice a difference in audio quality. We're looking at what's next for Parler, social media app that has offered conservatives and frankly anybody an opportunity to talk without censorship. And we're delighted to have Amy Peacock, the chief policy officer for Parler, who's going to talk with us. I wanted to point out why this is so important. Starting with the rise of the internet and the whole development of a capacity for people to communicate with each other electronically all over the world, we've gotten more and more used to the idea that we would have free, uncensored access. In fact, for a long time, we took great pride in the difference between the Chinese and the Russians on the one hand, who do censor and control thought and conversation, and the openness of Western society. And then recently we've discovered that, in fact, partly for the sociological reason that the internet giants, Google, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all grew up in the cultural environment of San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And so they all operate from a groupthink on the left. And they believe that they had the power and the right to censor people down to a level where, on one particular day before the election, 4 out of 6 tweets by Rush Limbaugh were stopped by Twitter, to them having the arrogance to take the President of the United States off of their systems. So you had, as somebody pointed out, Zuckerberg, who got 0 votes for president, dictating what Trump, who got 74 million votes for president, was allowed to communicate. And in the middle of all this, one of the encouraging developments was the growth of Parler, which had been launched back in September 2018 by John Mates, Jared Thompson, and Rebecca Mercer. Parler really worked to develop its brand in the social media marketplace as an application where free speech is welcome. And as a result, it's become an alternative from users from other social media giants like Twitter and Facebook. And that's accelerated in the last few months as it's become obvious how totally biased the big internet companies are and the impact of them. On January 8th, Twitter permanently suspended @RealDonaldTrump, the president's Twitter account. Millions of conservatives began to look for other alternatives where their voice would be welcome and where they wouldn't be censored. And by January 2021, Parler's user base went from 2.3 million users to 15 million users. Then on January 11th, Parler disappeared, literally overnight, instantaneously. And here to tell the story of Parler, what it was trying to accomplish, what happened to it, and how it's coming back, and what we can expect next, is Amy Peacock, who is the chief policy officer of Parler. Amy, let me first of all just say thank you for joining me. I know how busy you are, and I know how important the development of Parler is. Could you start and talk about why John Mates and Jared Thompson and Rebecca Mercer founded the app, and what was their goal, and what's the goal of Parler today?
Thanks for having me on. Yes, we are very busily trying to get back online. But going back to the original mission, which of course is the mission today, the one that we've been trying to carry out and offer this unique product, we are simply trying to be an alternative to compete on a free market to address the problems that a number of people have seen with our competitors. And they've seen it both with respect to privacy, in the sense that they feel on other platforms that they are the commodity, that their personal data is being mined and it's being used for profit by the other companies. And they don't want to feel that way. They don't want to feel like they are being surveilled a la Big Brother in 1984. They would like to instead just be able to come on and have a conversation and share things with their friends and engage in discussion on meaningful issues. So that's one thing, the privacy. And then, of course, the other aspect is freedom of expression, as you were speaking about in the introduction. At Parler, it's not that we have no rules, no guidelines at all, but our guidelines are designed to allow the maximum amount of freedom of expression within the limits of the law. And so, of course, incitement and calls for violence or sedition has unfortunately become relevant recently. None of those things are welcome on Parler. And in fact, because our mission is to encourage civil discussion between people of differing viewpoints, as you and I know, Newt, any threats of force or violence or canceling and all the things that are going around today, that just stops productive discussion. And it's because it stops the thinking process that's required to engage in that productive discussion. But Parler, nonpartisan, a public square is the model, and allowing the maximum amount of freedom of expression within the limits of the law while also respecting the privacy of people on the platform.
When Twitter and Facebook banned Trump, as I understand it, Parler jumped to number one in the Apple Store and gained some 210,000 new members almost overnight. Wasn't it to the disadvantage of Apple and others to cut you off? I mean, I assume you were a money-making proposition for them.
Well, and that's really the interesting thing, right? Because while our app is free, there probably are opportunities when people go to the App Store and they want to download Parler that Google or Apple could make money off of the eyes being in their App Store for that period of time. Because people, while they're there, of course, could see some of the paid apps and download those as well, right? I think definitely we were a potential for them to make some money. And in so far as we might have some in-app purchases, then of course, you know, Apple takes a cut of those at least, and I imagine Google does as well.
My impression is that Google is, if anything, more aggressive in how they manipulate the data flow than Apple is.
That's my understanding as well. And in discussions that I've had with a representative that we had at Apple, they had never said that our guidelines, our free speech oriented guidelines themselves, were an issue. So it's definitely my impression. And I hope, given that Tim Cook recently has said that there's an opportunity for us to get back on the App Store with improved guidelines enforcement, that he's going to, you know, actually live up to those words, because we are going to come with a good proposal.
When you're not in the App Store, how do people get to you?
Well, the first thing for us, of course, is to get back online, because the biggest problem is Amazon withdrawing its server so suddenly without giving us an ability to adjust. And at the same time, when those three, Google and Apple and Amazon, decided to pull us, then others, you know, sort of in a cancel culture mob, followed suit. And so vendor after vendor after vendor, which is, you know, all of these are necessary to put something as complex as a social media platform online and having, you know, it operating both on the front end and the back end. A lot of people have withdrawn their services. And so we've had to come up and try to find replacements for all of those just to get back up. So right now, all we have is a static web page, which itself was an accomplishment. And we're working to, as soon as possible, get the whole rest of it back up online and then go to the App Store. But as I understand it, you can have a workaround with respect to Google. So the Android devices, you can sideload those, but that's not true with the Apple App Store. As far as I know, that's the only way to load onto the device the app. People who have the app on their Apple device could use that old version, but in terms of rolling out any updates, including the updates that are going to be required to have improved guidelines enforcement, we would need to get back on the App Store.
it seems to me there was clearly a restraint of trade and they were clearly trying to destroy you. And then what's their explanation for how all these companies suddenly came together and decided that you weren't acceptable?
I can't speak to the legal claims about restraint of trade. There's ongoing litigation right now. And as to their motives, we can only guess from circumstantial evidence, but we know that there were the events of the 6th. We also know that there were a number of people out there on Twitter and elsewhere trying to blame the events of January 6th on Parler users specifically. And in a number of tweets out there, they were tagging Apple and tagging Google. And so just given the timeline of when we received the notifications, it seems that Apple went public with theirs first. Google, I guess, went public with theirs too. They didn't even bother sending us any notice, Google. And then shortly, about an hour and a half after we heard from Apple, we then heard from Amazon. What is the motive? Some people have speculated that the motive was to deny the president any presence on the internet. We can't know that unless there's some discovery behind the scenes and everything else. But I do know that there was a very loud and vocal mob out there online trying to blame all of this on Parler or Parler users. And, you know, aside from the questions of free will that are involved, I think we now have seen that the content, this inciting content, was not just on Parler, but it was everywhere around the internet.
The thing that strikes me is they were really offended by the fact that you allowed conservatives without censorship.
It could be. And different companies have very different views about so-called hate speech, right, which is a very vague term. And also about misinformation. That's another term that gets thrown around all the time. And in a free market, different companies should be able to decide what policy they're going to have about speech on their platform and compete and just be free to compete on the market. And those people who want to be on a platform that does allow hate speech within the limits of the law or does allow misinformation again within the limits of the law, they should just be able to freely choose that. But it seems more and more today that there are a number of companies who do have the power to influence and themselves withdraw their services, influence others to withdraw their services. And one thing that I've written about recently at my blog at don'tletitgo.com, this blog post where I talk about this, at a certain point when you start to look at the combination of the Section 230 immunity that is provided to these platforms and internet service providers, when they make the choice to remove content, to so-called moderate content, they get the immunity for that. It's protected from legal challenge. And then at the same time, we've seen recently in this series of what I call haranguings, you know, hearing and haranguing blended together, they bring these CEOs before them. And the people, usually on the left, are telling them that they need to remove more and more content. And the content that they're asking them to remove is content that would otherwise be protected by the First Amendment. So you combine that immunity and then you add the pressure that's coming from politicians who are saying, in effect, we're going to withdraw this immunity if you don't do it our way. This choice that supposedly the law leaves up to you, you have to do it our way now. That's very dangerous.
Hasn't the Supreme Court ruled that you cannot have a private company infringe on the First Amendment on behalf of the government, that if the government is not allowed to do it, then the private company can't do it either?
Well, if they haven't ruled it, then certainly they should. And there's a number of legal minds who are, you know, pushing in that direction. I mean, this is the thing again, Newt. I'm a very free market oriented person. And you know, always for years, I've thought, okay, Facebook's a private company and Twitter's a private company, and they should be allowed to reserve the right to refuse service to anyone, right? The way the signs that we'd see in a restaurant or something. And now, again, we're in this situation where they do have this immunity that sort of shelters everything that's under the hood back there. How are they making these decisions to remove content, you know, according to what criteria? And all those engagement enhancing algorithms, which themselves are responsible for either highlighting or a lot of people call it shadow banning content, and perhaps a lot of the engagement enhancing algorithms have resulted in more of this sort of more violent rhetoric or heated rhetoric that's out there too, right? All of this is under the hood, shielded from immunity. And, you know, 230 has been protecting this for years. And then what do they do when they start seeing all of this get ratcheted up? They start removing a whole lot of people, and probably not objectively according to good criteria. They have employees, and their employees have their biases and everything else. And then they have politicians urging them to do more. So we're in this place now where I'm almost forced to conclude that they are not acting as free actors on a free market anymore. Their monetization models, again, which rely upon all of the data mining and this content manipulation, those monetization models, they've become dependent on legal immunity to protect those from legal challenge. In the case of Facebook, for example, they've had two consent orders with the FTC that, in effect, you know, some privacy-oriented like EFF, they have said that the consent orders don't do enough actually to challenge what Facebook does with data. But imagine that all of that is protected by these consent orders or Section 230 and everything else, and at the same time you have the government urging them to treat otherwise legally protected content in the ways that they want. It's a very dangerous situation. It doesn't look like a very free market to me. And I would probably include in that Amazon, which I assume, and again, I'm not an expert on how exactly 230 would apply to Amazon, but I think Amazon would also be covered by it in a certain way, and that perhaps they would also be caving to those sorts of pressures.
So would you simply eliminate 230 and make them liable to lawsuits when things are published that are libels?
In an ideal world, which we are unfortunately not in right now, in the ideal world, I was very attracted to what Justice Clarence Thomas wrote in the denial of cert for Malwarebytes versus Enigma recently. And in that, you know, it wasn't very long and it didn't spell out all the details, but he was calling for a more narrow interpretation of Section 230, in which some of the activities that these platforms use to either create content or editorialize on content or otherwise modify content or the way that the content is put out into the world, those things would be more susceptible to legal challenge. Things that they're doing would not remain completely under the hood. They'd be open to discovery and things like that. And that people would be able to actually redress their grievances in a court of law, which is the American way to be able to do this. I'm a former academic and I'm cautiously optimistic that this can happen. But now we see, you know, Democrat in the White House, we see a Democratic controlled House and Senate. And my concern is that 230 is instead going to be amended in the way that Mark Zuckerberg has been pretty much asking for in these harangings, which is to require of these platforms to first report how they are dealing with so-called objectionable content, including hate speech and maybe also misinformation. I don't remember the exact words that he used, but he wanted these transparency reports that they're doing to be in effect mandated for every platform. And then the second thing he suggested was that in addition to that, the platforms should be evaluated in terms of their efficiency in dealing with this so-called objectionable content, and so that they would actually be held to a certain standard in dealing with it. Imagine if 230 is amended to require platforms to deal with content that would otherwise be protected by the First Amendment up to the standards of the latest politician's whims. That's a scary world to me. That starts to look like Orwell's 1984 in a certain sense. If you start to think of government maybe having access to this because those records about how they're dealing with the content becomes ordinary business records, it gets even scarier.
I agree with you. I think we're right at the edge of almost an Orwellian dictatorship, in which if you say the wrong thing, I just noticed today some 500 junior staff at various publishing houses have signed a joint letter that nobody who worked for Trump should be allowed to write a book. Now,
wow.
When you think about that, that's Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia or Maoist China. That's just crazy. But that's where the mob attitude has gotten at the moment.
But I think that anybody, regardless of political persuasion, should be scared by that. Snowden, he said yesterday, if I have to choose between a voice and a country, I would choose having a voice. We're in the 21st century. And imagine in the 21st century, in the freest country in the history of the world, Americans are having to choose between having a voice and having a country. It's unfathomable.
You've had the Russians, the Germans, the French, even the Chinese have all come out and sort of pulled our chain and said, they think it's terrible that we have all of this censorship. The number of people who I know do not like Trump, who nonetheless, as world leaders, said, this is such a terrible precedent, so much endangers your freedom, that they were really, really worried about it. So you now have a series of suits. What's the circumstance for Parler right now?
So the current is with Amazon. And of course, Amazon, again, is the thing that took us offline completely because we didn't have server access. And so we are trying to build solid alternatives to that. But in addition to that, we have a number of people who have threatened, once we are online, to do everything that they can to try to hack us, take us down, et cetera. It's a big cancel culture mob out there. And you start to wonder, couldn't we all just go back to the idea that in a free country, we live and let live, we compete, and if you don't like a particular platform, you can go over and patronize and give your money and attention and everything else to Twitter and Facebook and, you know, let other people deal with Parler. But no, so I don't know exactly how it's going to go going forward. Would it be the case that Amazon would let us back on? Or are we going to find alternatives? But the litigation itself, I can't really comment on because it's pending.
Yeah, of course. But it's interesting, as I understand it, that your contract with them actually provided for a 30-day notice.
Right, yes.
And they just terminate.
Yes.
How hard is it to build an alternative set of server farms?
That's what we're learning now. And there was an excellent piece on Zero Hedge the other day that said, why you can't, quote, just build your own Twitter. And it explains all the various things that are necessary in order to be able to get you back up online. And there's this tremendous infrastructure that's required. So again, for me, I'm not in favor of things like net neutrality, where you are telling private businesses how to run their business. But if it gets to the point where you really have more of a crony relationship, where you have something that's really approaching fascism, which in this industry we're starting to see in this country due to the pressure from the politicians, et cetera, you get to a point where you get that common law analogy to somebody who's on a piece of land and landlocked and can't get to the road. So if you're truly landlocked, then the common law used to provide for an easement. And is something like that necessary until you get something resembling a free market again in this space? I know that Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web, is starting to try to invent alternatives, a different part of the internet where things can actually be free and censorship resistant, et cetera, again, because he too has been, you know, disillusioned by the way things have gone.
He has a great case study. I remember reading about him, I guess, almost 30 years ago. And it was a very idealistic vision of how we could have this information highway that we all had access to. And he must be extraordinarily disappointed by the way in which these oligarchs have basically poisoned the well at the moment. I mean, we may be able to get back to fixing it, but there's no question that they have created an environment that is hostile to everything that Tim Berners-Lee wanted when he was inventing the World Wide Web.
Right.
I also understand that John Matsch, the Parler CEO, and his family received death threats. Is that really true?
Yeah, that's my understanding, yes.
That's pretty scary, frankly.
Yes. You know, I've gotten a lot of trolls. The other day, Newt, I shared a quotation from Martin Luther King Jr., okay. And in that quotation, he talks about extremism, which is very interesting, from the letter from Birmingham Jail. And he talks about how Jesus was an extremist for love and Amos for justice, Lincoln presumably for equality before the law. And I just put that quotation on Twitter on Martin Luther King's Day on Monday. Mobs on Twitter were trying to argue that if I'm quoting Martin Luther King Jr., that I'm comparing myself to Jesus. And this is how insane that it's gotten out there. And people, instead of actually trying to make arguments and looking and saying, oh, that's really interesting about extremism, but I'm not sure. I still don't really agree that it's good to be extremist. Let's have a discussion about it. Instead, they resort to just baseless insults. And in the extreme case, they resort to threats and canceling and things like this. We really need in this country to get back to our foundations, which were to be able to deal with each other on the basis of reason and persuasion, and to turn on our critical thinking caps. And, you know, if you don't like misinformation, well, then let's go out there and do the organic fact checking. Let's go ahead and have a reasoned discussion about it. That's the sort of thing that we are trying to promote on Parler. And in some ways, I think we have an uphill battle, because people have been, I think, in some ways encouraged in this through the engagement enhancing algorithms of our competitors that are rumored to be there, right? And we're just trying to promote this sort of discussion. And as I said, it's been quite a challenge. Just offering our product has been such an activist activity. I wouldn't have thought that.
So somebody who goes to Parler.com right now is going to be given a statement basically that you're working on it.
It's a static page, but you can scroll through and see a few parlays as well.
Okay. So somebody who wants to stay in touch, wants to rejoin as soon as you're up and running, what should they do?
I would say keep visiting Parler.com. And of course, when we are up and running, we're going to make an announcement to that effect. And we assume that freedom of expression in this country won't be clamped down in that short a time, that you won't be able to hear the announcement when we make it.
That's great. And then people will be able to hopefully to rejoin or to join for the first time to Parler.com.
Yes, and we definitely welcome, again, people of all viewpoints, please come over. People on Parler who work for Parler have views across the spectrum. Again, not many of us were actually Trump supporters, but we do believe in his right to go ahead and have the ability to speak like everybody else.
Well, listen, I really appreciate your taking the time. And once you guys are back up and running and you're ready to receive people, let us know and we will make sure to send it out to all of our various internet-based relationships.
I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you to my guest, Amy Peacock. You can read more about social media censorship of conservative voices and the shutdown of the Parler app on our show page at newtsworld.com. Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Barnsley Sloan, and our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendick. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at Gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.